after the hour. Welcome back to the show. We're going to get our guy, Zach Stevens, on the program in about 10 minutes. Our Broncos insider. And every week, getting just a little bit closer to finding out what the Broncos do with number 9. Oh, man. Micah Parsons, Patrick Surtain, Kyle Pitts even, the tight end stud. Or a quarterback. I just don't see it. I think this is the year you stand pat with your offense. I think you stay with Drew Lock, and we're going to find out what Zach thinks about that. Colfax, my game of the week this week. It is not a local matchup, but it is what I'm intrigued by. I'm intrigued because it's two good teams going up against each other on Friday. But also, Friday. As we're approaching the last 20 games of the season here, we're at the last 20 games. It's time to scoreboard watch. It's time to start watching teams and hoping they lose. If you want the Nuggets to get up to number 3, you need the 76ers to beat the Clippers, among other games for the Clippers to lose. You need them to win that game. You need Philadelphia to win that game. Denver is now full game back behind the Los Angeles Clippers. And if you want to avoid playing the Lakers in the first round, that's all I'm going to say. Whether you love the Lakers or hate the Lakers or love LeBron or hate LeBron, wouldn't you, if you're betting, aren't you going to bet that LeBron always is going to get it and go deep in the playoffs? I mean, he always does. So the chances of LeBron James and this Lakers team losing in the first round, I don't see it happening. He's been out a while, so he could be very much energized by the time the playoffs hit. So, Denver needs to avoid that fourth or fifth spot. The Lakers are in fifth. The Nuggets are in fourth. They'd be playing each other. But if you can bump over the Clippers, then you protect yourself at least, because I don't think the Lakers are going to make a big move, a big push here in the next couple of weeks. Nuggets have a relatively easy schedule. I think Golden State's tonight, then Houston, then Miami. Miami's a decent team this year. But if you play like we saw in the 8-game winning streak, you should have no problem. If you play like you did against the Celtics in that fourth period especially, look out. But I don't see it happening again. In fact, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting on the Nuggets to win tonight against Golden State, even though Steph Curry still gives me nightmares. I don't care if his team's 500 or below or above, whatever. Steph Curry's a scary man. He's a dangerous, dangerous man. Mike Malone was clearly frustrated with the entire group yesterday. But that bench, Colfax, he's going to have to figure out what to do. Here's Mike Malone on the play from his bench.
Well, we're not whole. You know what I mean? Like, with Jamal Murray out, you know, that creates a change in your lineup and your rotation. When Jamal is usually 36 minutes a night, you know, 20 points, 4 or 5 assists, you know, 3 or 4 rebounds. So without him and Monte still on a minute restriction, you're trying to figure things out on the fly. And, you know, I thought Faku gave us good minutes, especially early. But as the game went on, obviously that game just got away from all of us. And then with the bigs, I think kids, the biggest thing is just trying to figure out the bigs. You know what I mean? Like, we have 3 guys that are capable of helping us and playing. Now, that's probably the only area where still trying to figure out what's going to be best for us moving forward. Overall, our bench unit tonight, you know, you can just go down the line. Wasn't our best night. And we'll need to be better tomorrow night in San Francisco.
Here's where you see the emergence of Porter. No one's arguing that. He's a starter. He's going to be a star. There's no question. He's there. And, man, he's starting to look like a defensive player. Like, he's starting to play better defense. He's coming up with some pretty nice plays. Still a lot to go there as far as his defensive progression. But this is the issue with having... Well, Murray's out, so that means, all right, you're going to go Campazzo there at starter, or you go Morris, but Morris is on a minute restriction, although he's getting more. Porter was coming off the bench at times, and then last year, and then you kind of saw back and forth, and then he missed like a month or whatever. There's just not a lot of scoring on the bench now that Porter's a full-time starter, and, you know, you're going with... You got Aaron Gordon, you got Barton, you got Porter, you got Joker, you got Campazzo, which normally that's going to be Murray plugged in there. Where's your scoring coming from? I mean, Campazzo had 14 points, but look at the rest of the bench. That's Campazzo as a starter. The bench, I mean, it was rough. P.J. Dozier had 7, which this guy is just up and down. Morris had 2. He had a very rough game. Again, it's only his third game back. Jermichael Green with 3. Paul Millsap with 2. So those guys fighting in that battle position for who's the next big man coming off the bench? Well, you had 3 and 2. JaVale McGee, 0 minutes. Did not play. Coach's decision. I think a lot of Nuggets fans are clamoring about this, and they want to see JaVale get some minutes. They want to see what he's got. I tend to agree. I have this weird loyalty to Paul Millsap. I do still like his defense, but he's not even close to the same player. Not even close to the same player he was last year. Jermichael Green has had his moments. I like his shooting ability for the most part. Nobody was shooting very well yesterday. This was tough, man. I mean, this whole game, it's amazing what you can do. You can win 8 games in a row, feel very good about yourself, absolutely slobber knock teams for the most part, save for the Spurs on Friday. And then one bad outing on a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, by the way. The Nuggets never seem to do very well when they play like a day game on Sunday. It's amazing what these kind of games can do as a fan. You back up and you go, wait a second, are we as good as we thought we were? Is Nikola Jokic the MVP? And the answer to all of those questions, yes, yes, you are as good as we all thought. It was, how often are the Nuggets going to score 8 points in the fourth? It's not going to happen. Malone has some bench issues here. But they were playing pretty good in the first. They outscored Boston 27-16 in the first. They were outscored by Boston 29-24 in the second. Then all of it evened out in the third, 28-29, Boston. And then the fourth was just awful, 31-8. You were outscored by. Those are awful numbers. So awful that you look at it and go, all right, is that ever going to happen again? I don't think so. But I do want to get out of a couple of habits. I do think that I'm saying this, Nuggets fans, and I'm speaking to you truthfully here. We're getting a little too whiny. A little too. The players, the coaches, the fans. I'm seeing it now. Brady, they are really going at Nikola Jokic. They are. But what good is that going to do? It's not helping. In fact, it might be making it worse. Because now Nikola Jokic, instead of going for a basketball shot, he's absorbing contact and chucking it up in the air. Just take the shot, man. You're a good enough player that when you get contact, you're going to still make it. If they don't call it, you got to live to fight another day. Something's not working. Flying Dutchman said, what was the three-point percentage like for the Nuggets against the Celtics? Wasn't it like 24? Yeah, I have it. 8 for 34. 23.5% from the three-point line. Is that going to happen that often? I mean, Campazzo was 100%. He was 3 for 3. The rest of the team was awful. Michael Porter Jr., who was like breaking records as far as the best field goal percentage, and he hardly ever scores on the inside. He shoots a lot of threes, and he shoots a lot of mid-range jumpers. He was 1 for 12 from the three-point line. That's not happening very often. Gordon was 1 for 3. Barton was 1 for 3. Joker was 0 for 2. Green was 1 for 4. Najee, rookie coming in, 0 for 2. Millsap, 0 for 1. Chanchar, 0 for 1. Bol Bol was in, and you missed your damn three-point shot. You're done. That's it. You got your 2 minutes of fame. You missed your shot. Get out of here. Fans really want to see Bol Bol. We like really tall guys. Like, guys that are just so tall, it's bizarre to us, because JaVale McGee, Bol Bol, fans are just like, why aren't those guys in? They either really want really tall guys or really short guys, because it's just fun. It's fun to see that dynamic, I guess. I'm not worried at all about Denver. As far as what I think this team's capable of. I'm worried about bad habits. And where I thought Mike Malone's technical and ejection from last week might actually just kind of even add more fuel to Denver's fire, I kind of wonder if it has the reverse effect, where now they're like, all right, our coach is seeing it. We're not getting fouled. He was so hot about it, he got ejected. Maybe there's something to this. Joker is in that game, and then I saw it once about 2 weeks ago. Can't remember who it was against, but kind of revert back to the frustrated Joker of old for moments. where he doesn't get the foul call he's looking for. He takes a lousy shot, and then he turns around and does a slap foul. It's not even a basketball foul. It is a, I'm going to hit you because I'm frustrated. He almost did it last night or yesterday, but caught himself and pulled back. That frustration, I'm wondering if that is spilling over because Mike Malone's frustration. And again, this was one of Mike Malone's worst coached second halves I've seen in a while. He left that bench in way too long. They weren't getting it done. And this is where, all right, you need wins, folks. You need wins. It is time to go out there and get some wins. Here's Mike Malone at the end of this game and just kind of how everything went haywire in the third and fourth periods.
That we have to be better. They turned up the heat, got into us. They switched everything, and we allowed that to kill our offensive flow. Then we started complaining and whining, not getting back, not competing. Give them credit. I mean, 31-8 in the fourth quarter. Obviously, I think it all started, though. I think we're up 14 towards the end of the third quarter, Mike, and I think we had probably four straight turnovers, and that just kind of ignited them. Then in the fourth quarter, we're just never able to get anything going on either end of the floor, and that's unfortunate because we haven't played like that in a long time. So the best thing about the NBA, we get on a plane this afternoon, go to Golden State, and try to right the ship and get back to playing at a much higher level than we played today.
The whining thing is realistic. Yeah, something's got to change. I tweeted it out moments ago and I just said, are the Nuggets and their fans getting a little too whiny when it comes to NBA officiating? I mean, take it from me. I want the Nuggets to win as much as the next guy, but there's got to be other teams experiencing this. It happens in stages, I would guess. 17 minutes after the hour, is Nikola Jokic being treated unfairly? No, I think he's a unique player that referees are still not used to how he plays, and sometimes do they not give him the benefit of the doubt? Sure. Our old friend BJ Hill tweeted me and said, calls are for closers instead of the coffee. It's for closers. Calls are for closers. 17 after the hour. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. We're talking Broncos. Zach Stevens coming up next. We'll be right back.
Volleyball and baseball coming to a Preps broadcast near you on Northern Colorado's Voice. 1310 KFKA. Want the whole sports story in Northern Colorado, the state, and the country? Tune into The Hull Show, weekdays noon to 2 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Miles Blumhardt, sports editor at the Fort Collins Coloradoan, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Talking Broncos now with our guy with DNVR, Bronco Zach Stevens. Zach, my friend, what can you tell us about Peyton Manning and Drew Locke working together this offseason?
Well, how about that, Drew picking the brain of Peyton Manning? No better brain to pick, am I right, Brady?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, this isn't a surprise. The two talked last offseason, had a couple of conversations. One of them was for over an hour, just talking really about how to approach offseason, especially with just the weird offseason that last year was. But this offseason, the two are actually working together, watching some film, trying to understand the mental side of the game. And there really is no better person to do that than to pick Peyton Manning's brain. So what you love about this is it shows full initiative from Drew Locke. This was Drew reaching out to Peyton to make this happen. And the thing, though, is, Brady, Drew's work ethic has never really been questioned. Heck, you go back to last year, and when Drew was suspended or had to miss a game due to COVID, that was because he was in on his off day working. That wasn't because, you know, he was doing something that he shouldn't have been doing. Now, they should have been wearing masks, but that's in the past. But it was because he was getting extra work in. So Drew's issue has never been putting the work in. What his biggest issue has been is being able to read through his progressions, read defenses at the line of scrimmage, and in the 3 seconds after you snap the ball, reading the defenses and deciding the best place to go with the ball. And there's no better person to turn to than Peyton Manning. Now, how much can this help? Well, how much does the game slow down for Drew this coming year? And can he learn some things from Peyton? That will decide if Drew takes the next step and if he's the guy for the long term, or if he's not the guy. And unfortunately, George Payton won't be able to see the answer to that before the draft this month.
Zach, we got to see there's got to be a Rocky montage here or something between Payton and Drew. Drew's running around chasing chickens or something, getting ready to go, taking notes and doing all this crazy stuff. We got to see that, man. I don't know why, but as you're talking, I'm just kind of getting this really optimistic feeling around Drew Locke all of a sudden. I don't know. Call me crazy.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, just talking about this, it's because Drew's doing the right things, and you want to pull for Drew. You know, it would be a great story to see a second-round pick, you know, John Elway's last big swing on a quarterback, actually work out on his way out. And he's putting the time in, and that's something that you have to have as a quarterback. You have to have the work ethic. And Drew, especially this offseason, has proven that he has the work ethic. But like I said, the tough thing with this and the tough thing for George Payton is how much does George trust that Drew's going to be able to turn it around, because he sees that he's putting the time in, but he's not going to be able to see on the field whether this translates to actually being able to read defenses if the game slows down for him. Because, Brady, if you go into this year and you get bottom five quarterback play again, well, it's a big disappointment because of everything you've set up on defense and what you have on offense outside of the quarterback position. So it would be a big disappointment. And you're in a spot right now sitting at number nine, Brady, where you probably won't be sitting this high up in the draft next year because just how good this defense is. If they stay healthy, you're probably talking the closest they're going to be is, you know, 14, 15 in the draft. If they get, you know, a little better quarterback play, they'll be close to 20. And then you can't move up to get a top guy like the Broncos could this year.
Man, there's just so many interesting scenarios here. Zach, I was watching Good Morning Football this morning, and several mock drafts they've been putting together all have the Broncos essentially going with a quarterback for the most part. Then I read Aqib Talib's comments this morning about, hey, get a linebacker, complete that defense. And I got to tell you, I actually am more in line of, hey, you have a potential in this unit, in this defensive unit, to make it a top five unit. Maybe it already is, but if you can get your biggest area of weakness, which might be inside linebacker, you could make that defense. Who knows? We could be talking legendary again.
Yes, and you know, we know if John Elway was running the show, he would certainly like the sounds of that after the Super Bowl 50 defense and what they did. And that's going to be the hard challenge for George Payton. And what plays into that hand even more, Brady, is I think the Broncos can get the same caliber of defensive player after a trade back picking around 18 that they can at 9. Now, it may not be the exact position. Maybe you're not going, Micah Parsons, but you could get JOK, who may actually be a better suited inside linebacker than Micah Parsons, especially with what the Broncos would want from him. You could probably get that at 18. And if you get that plus an additional first-round pick for next year, or you pick up 2 seconds in order to move back, that could be George Payton's dream scenario right there, especially, let's say, and from what I've heard, the Broncos really, really like Justin Fields. Well, what if he impresses the San Francisco 49ers so much in these next coming weeks that the 49ers decide to go with Justin Fields? And then, really, there's no quarterback left that you like. So not only are you not trading up for one, but then they fall to 9 and you're not really about that. But let's say the Patriots at 15 are all about Mac Jones if he's there at 9. You trade back with them. You get a great defensive player at 15, and you do what George Payton loves to do, and that's get more draft capital.
Zach Steven joining us from DNVR Broncos. Zach, does Peyton Manning, is he still somewhat close to the organization? Does he know George Payton very well? And if so, what does him working with Drew Locke, other than the fact that it's just good for Drew Locke and it's no matter what his career ends up being in Denver or wherever, what does that mean necessarily?
Well, I think it shows that Peyton believes in Drew at least a little bit, right? I mean, if he had zero faith in him, it probably wouldn't be multiple sessions of him working with Drew. Peyton is a guy that we talk about being busy for the next year, you know, having something on his calendar. and he was able to squeeze out time for Drew. So, you know, he has Peyton Manning's stamp of approval, at least to an extent right now. And that's not a surprise from everything we've heard Peyton talk about Drew. And Drew has all the physical tools. And Peyton still is pretty close to the organization, you know, as close as he can be for being a truly outside guy. But whenever he records things in Denver, it's always at the Broncos organization. He has a very good relationship with the team still.
So do you think that there's a conversation going on with Manning and Broncos brass that's like, hey, here's what I've been seeing, guys. Is anything like that happening? Again, because they know what they have. George Payton doesn't necessarily. And that's where I just wonder if that link is beginning there between Payton and the other Payton, Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and you would hope so. I mean, geez, Peyton's a great resource for that, but I don't think there's too much into that. I think what Peyton's doing with these conversations with Drew is really teaching him, not actually drilling him on what's going on. So I don't think this offseason that George Payton is going to get that critical of information from Peyton Manning. But hey, if I'm George Payton, Brady, I'm certainly making a call and just seeing if he sees Drew picking up on the things that Peyton's teaching him.
All right, Zach, we're going to start doing this for the next couple of segments. You're up. You're George Payton. You're the Broncos at number 9. We're getting ready. You're on the clock. What are you doing when you have, all right, I guess there's, let's say 4 quarterbacks are gone. Is it Mac Jones? Is he available? You tell me who's available 9. If that quarterback's there, maybe the 5th best on the list, what are you doing at 9? Are you trading back? You taking the QB? You taking a position of need?
So I'm George Payton, and let's just say any of those 5 or 3 quarterbacks are there. But if I'm George Payton, I'm absolutely drafting a quarterback. And for me, Brady, it really is any of the 5 quarterbacks that are available I'm taking. However, I think George Payton really is keying in on 1 quarterback, and that quarterback could be gone at 3. Let's say it's Justin Fields, and that's a guy that I've heard linked to that. Let's say Justin Fields is gone at 3, then they're not just going to follow my philosophy of take a quarterback. Even though that's what I want them to do, they're not going to. They're not going to force that. So if the phone rings and let's say Justin Fields isn't on the board and I'm on the clock, well, the phone's ringing and I've got a trade already dialed up to trade back it later in the first round. And as far as you can, you trade back to get a first round pick next year. But let's say you're not able to get that. You trade for a couple of second-round picks. You trade because Mac Jones is on the board. You trade to 15 with the New England Patriots because they love Mac Jones. Well, then you pick up an additional second, third-round pick to move back to 15. And then you're taking best player available, who I'm saying I'm going to go with JOK right now. Uwusu-Koura out of the linebacker-safety hybrid out of Missouri. And what he would be great at is just versatility. He's a guy that can cover. He's a very undersized inside linebacker, but you're in a good position right now because you already have a huge inside linebacker with Alexander Johnson. He can be your Swiss Army knife around the defense, not just at linebacker, but also at safety. Especially, let's say you find out that he's better suited at safety. Well, then he can become your full-time starting safety next year alongside Justin Simmons after Kareem's done.
Yeah, and I love that other scenario you point out about going after JOK there, because if you get him, you can still get him in the first and maybe just a little bit later on. And then you have a few options with that second. And I, you know, you and I have talked about the running back side of things too. And if he's there, if Najee Harris is there, you and I both like him. That's an interesting one. Working with the Patriots as a dance partner on that's an interesting one to me. Let me ask you this, Zach. As far as going to pro days and these quarterbacks and some of these top players, do you have a list exactly of who all George Payton's pro days, where did he go exactly?
I do. Let me pull it up right here. So he has been on the field level for Trey Lance at North Dakota State. He's been to South Carolina's pro day, where, of course, J.C. Horn was a guy he got to see in person who did very well. He was at Penn State's, where you have Micah Parsons. He was at BYU's with Zach Wilson, and of course he was at Ohio State with Justin Fields. The big one that I did not say was Alabama. George Payton, even though Alabama had 2 pro days, George Payton didn't attend either. And you never want to put too much stock in it, But Brady, I mean, George Payton's a scout at heart. He trusts his eyes. That, to me, unfortunately, because I'm a big Bama guy, that unfortunately does speak some volumes to that. But he's got to see multiple of these first-round quarterbacks. He's got to see a first-round cornerback in J.C. Horn, and he's got to see, you know, maybe the most talented defensive player in Micah Parsons.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting. I'm trying to be Sherlock Holmes here. Just take all of the little things and put them together, and we're going to figure it out what he's going to do. In your experience, and maybe even just being a fan before you were doing what you do, Zach, is this not one of the more intriguing drafts we've seen for the Broncos, maybe all the NFL, because of all these quarterbacks thrown around?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it may be the first time that we see quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, heck, maybe even 5.
Yeah.
We see that. So it really is an unprecedented draft in terms of that. And that's what I have to keep reminding people is, look, we may sit here next year and the Broncos got better quarterback play from Drew Lock, but really realized he's not the future. There's no guarantee that there's going to be 5 first-round quarterbacks next year. It's not like the Broncos could go from, you know, drafting 15 next year, trade up to 9 in order to get the 5th best quarterback. They may be reaching big time if that's the case. So we really may never see another quarterback draft class like this where there's 5 guys that will go in the top 10, 4 in the first 4 picks potentially. I think that is still what happens. I think a team jumps with the Falcons to 4, or the Falcons sit there and pick Trey Lance. This really is an opportunity for the Broncos to get a very good quarterback without having to mortgage too much.
And another guy, last one for you. I've seen you guys talk a lot about him as the tight end, Kyle Pitts out of Florida. I know Noah Fant's the guy, but I got to tell you, the more I read up and again, watching your guys' stuff at DMVR Broncos, there's part of me that's like, I don't know, man. Load up the tight ends. Let's just see what happens.
It's the ultimate luxury because it's the tight end position, which it doesn't have that much value. And you already have Noah Fant, who has broken every Broncos record for being a rookie and being 2 years in the league. He's phenomenal. But, Brady, could you imagine? I mean, back in the day, the Patriots had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, and those two were so good. We're talking about a duo that could be here for 10 years as opposed to just like 2 that Gronk and Aaron Hernandez had. And that could be so physically talented and so good. But when people talk about Kyle Pitts, and I've seen multiple draft experts talk about him, they don't just say generational. They say potentially the most talented tight end to ever play. So that's the type of person we're talking about. We're not talking about the Broncos just grabbing another first-round tight end to pair with Noah Fant. We're talking about maybe the most talented player to ever play the position to pair with a guy that's a freak of an athlete and Noah Fant as well. I mean, that gets me excited too. Although some people say, yeah, but it's tight end, you can't do that. But you think about the matchups that would create along with Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler, Melvin Gordon. That's exciting too.
Yeah. And that's why this draft is so appealing for the Broncos, because I don't know if you can go wrong necessarily. Maybe there's a way to do it, but a quarterback. All right. Well, we all can agree. Drew Lock, whether you got goosebumps thinking about him and Peyton Manning doing a Rocky impression or not, his stats don't back it up. So you'd go, all right, that made sense. I could see Micah Parsons. Yeah, let's get an awesome inside linebacker. I could see JOK. I could see a like you said, not a generational tight end, perhaps one of the greatest of all times potentially. They don't just throw that out there very often. So that's why this draft is just absolutely must-see TV, at least for the Broncos.
And on top of that, the Broncos could get Penny Sewell or Rashawn Slater and just solidify their tackles for the next 5 years. And Penny Sewell is a guy who isn't falling because he had a bad season at Oregon last year. He's falling just because of what these quarterbacks are doing and how much the quarterbacks are jumping. And Penny Sewell, just 1 year ago, was viewed as a top 5 pick this year. He's still that quality of player. And if the Broncos land that, that would also be a big piece.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Zach, what do you have going for us that we can check out? I've been enjoying what you guys have been putting together leading up to this draft. So many different scenarios, but it's why we play the game, man. It's so much fun as we get closer and closer to the draft.
It is a blast. Brady, I'm doing the exact same thing you're doing. I'm putting on my investigating hat and trying to find out exactly which way the Broncos are going. Not going to be able to find out exactly which way they're going, but try to narrow in. You know, I've narrowed in that, you know, they really like a quarterback. Do they love a quarterback? And it does not seem like a jump is going to happen up to number four until probably draft day. So just try to figure out what circumstances need to happen in order for that jump to happen.
Man, you're more of a Sherlock Holmes than I. I could be Watson or something. I don't know. Man, Zach.
Hey, I'd love it.
Zach, always appreciate you, my friend, and keep up the great work. We'll look to catch up with you soon.
Right on. Can't wait, Brady. Thanks.
All right, Zach Stevens, DMVR Broncos. Yeah, I just get this picture of Zach. You know, you've seen the movie, the Sherlock Holmes movie, where Sherlock Holmes, Johnny Depp's version, is like lying on the couch playing his violin, trying to figure out how to make these flies move around, and he's going crazy. And his I pick Zach doing that with all of these mock drafts and all this. Look at that. You can take a lot from the pro days. Where he went for pro day? Well, he went to Zach Wilson's pro day. We're not getting him. You and Justin Fields, maybe. He likes, this isn't necessarily who he likes, though, right? Colfax, he could go there because he wanted to hear more. Maybe he didn't see enough from them in the regular season, so he's going to go to pro day. So it could almost be the reverse effect. Whose pro day did he go to? Who did he need to see more of that didn't tickle his fancy in the regular season? It's interesting. 39 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA, the Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m.
This is Sefa Lufau, former Colorado Buffaloes quarterback, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Our Power to Play Sports poll question is available at theholeshow.com, as is my Deep Thoughts from a Wandering Mind, our blog. Catch some NOCO sports news around the area, press releases that we get. We try to put those available for you at theholeshow.com, podcasts, Thursday Night Special Game of the Week. All those things you can catch at theholeshow.com. Which area football coach, college football coach, are you more excited to see in a full, real football season in 2021? And I'm just refreshing. So it was Carl Durrell leading by quite a lot. Ed McCaffrey took the lead in our poll today. 46% of the hooligans saying Eddie Mack. 38 saying Carl Durrell. 15 going with you, Colfax. Only 15 are going with you on Steve Addazio.
Come on. I mean,
is he not exciting? He's the guys being dudes guy.
Guys being dudes. And he's transforming this team right before our eyes.
I think so.
We have yet to really see what it's going to turn out to be.
Last season, CSU got screwed over more than CU did, and more UNC just didn't even play because the Big Sky at least all opt to play in the spring, and so that was that. So you know, UNC didn't even get started. CSU got started, but played like what, four games?
Yeah,
one of them was called off for social justice stuff or whatever. Whatever, Utah State. I'm not going to get into that again. Utah State situation, and then there was couple of weird ones. They had a weird situation, so you never really got to grab hold, and you started with the quarterback that you didn't want. I mean, they go with Todd Senteo, then it's back to Patrick O'Brien, then it's back to Todd Senteo. Addazio was trying to merge Bobo's offense with his offense, and you see that in first years anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really unfair to take that season and go, well, based on that. Just like it's probably a little unfair or, you know, a little crazy to go, oh, well, CU was that damn good last year. Were they? I mean, yeah, I love Carl Durrell, don't get me wrong. His demeanor, everything about him. But you do have to ask. Last year, I kind of think you throw out the window. I really do. For everything.
You have to.
Especially a lot of those teams that only played like five games. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So I'm more or less excited to see what's going to happen with McCaffrey, though. That's just where I am at this stage. Because win or lose, this is going to be very intriguing. Just to see how it all plays out. I mean, nobody thought Ed McCaffrey was coming here. This is a Denver Bronco coming to Greeley, Colorado to be the head coach of a very much struggling football team. if they do struggle early on, is Coach McCaffrey going to get frustrated? Is it, you know, is he frustrated with the facilities? Because let's face it, he was at Valor Christian before he came to UNC. Valor Christian, it's a high school, 2 years, but man, their facility is, it's fantastic. So, I mean, does he get frustrated? Fans won't get frustrated. I mean, I think McCaffrey has a long time at in Greeley before fans would finally go, yeah, you know, the fanfare has started to wear off a little bit. So, you know, we're ready to move on. Yeah, I think he's got like 10 years before that goes. Look what happened with Ernest Collins Jr. I mean, you have CU make it to the, you know, the Alamo Bowl last year. They kind of get smoked by Texas, 55-23, but they did win four. They went 4-1. So, I mean, that's exciting, but as far as must-see for me, it's Ed McCaffrey just because of the storyline surrounding. And maybe that's because we didn't get to see it last year. If we got to see it last year and we're going to the second, maybe it changes. You want to talk football X's and O's? I'm excited to see what Steve Addazio does with this because I like a run, hard-nosed defense, run the ball. I like that. And as far as Carl Durrell, I was very shocked they were able to do the things that they did all year. I did not see that coming in a million years. You're replacing Mel Tucker. There's so much drama behind that. I was absolutely blown away. Jarrett Broussard, the running back that just kept having these monster games. I'm excited to see him back and then their quarterback position, how that's going to lay out. 49 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll wrap up with closing thoughts and what's on TV. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios.
Donate to the Live United 1310-a-thon by texting KFKA, all caps, to 26989. Give up to $100 and you could win a signed pair of Terrell Davis cleats. Thursday, April 22nd. What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint, a Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back to the show. It's going to be a busy night tonight. You've got the Colorado Avalanche playing host to the Arizona Coyotes. That will be on altitude at 7 o'clock. They are red hot. I mean, it's hard to, when we do the whole poll thing about the Avs, Nuggets, who's going to win a title, who's likely to win a title this year, it's hard not to pick the Avs. They are just, they're just a fantastic team. And maybe going to make some history this year. The Nuggets, hopefully they can bounce back after a pitiful performance against the Boston Celtics yesterday. It was a 1 o'clock game. They take on Golden State tonight, 8 o'clock. That one's on ESPN. Those of you that don't have the dish, the Comcast set up or whatever, I don't even know where they are on that now. There you go. It'll be on ESPN. No Rockies tonight or later today. But they do start their series, second series already, against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the Rocks are sitting at 3-7 to start this bad boy off. Can we expect more of the same coming up against the best team in baseball? Probably so. Just couldn't get the bats going. Had a lot of guys left on base throughout these last, well, really the last couple of series, the last two series, even the one they won, but could not get the bats to come alive when they needed to most. When they were getting guys on base, couldn't do anything with it, left them stranded, and had a lot of that going on in that Giants series. So can they bounce back? Yikes, no. Not against the Dodgers. I'll tell you what, if you were optimistic at all, it's going to get worse before it gets better. With this schedule, you have to admit, schedule's kind of crazy playing the Dodgers this soon. After 10 games, you're already playing the Dodgers in another series. So, good luck. It's Monday night. We'll be back at it for a Top Text Tuesday. Colfax, ready to rock and roll there. And we have a couple of guys that could take this thing. The David Thompson signed jersey from Fresh Coat Painter South Platte is still up for grabs because you guys keep fighting You're eating pitches, keeping it alive. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Good night, Northern Colorado.